You know, today is Gimel Shvat, which is the yahrzeit of Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. So I wanted to say some Torah in his name that can be a memory and Sfas of Dovos Bekever. We're learning now the Sugya of Megillah, and I was wondering the following. With regard to Megillah, what would be if the Koreas HaMegillah would not have in mind to be motzi the people who are listening to the Megillah? Notice, to what extent is it absolutely critical to have kavana that the Kore has in mind Reuven, Shimon, Levi, whoever is sitting in the audience? Obviously, as far as the Sholem are concerned, you know, they need kavana. They have to be there for the sake of the Megillah. The Gemara says that if a person, this is Gemara later on in Daf Yuches, a person is writing the Megillah and he's reading it at the same time, he has to have kavana for the sake of Megillah. But I'm wondering about the person who reads the Megillah. So there was a story in which, I think it happened, if I'm not mistaken, in the city of Chaslavich, where Rav Moshe Soloveitchik was the Rav, that after Kriyas HaTorah, the Baal Kore notified one of the members of the Kehillah that he had in mind not to be motzi the Kehillah. He was very angry at the Kehillah. So in order to take revenge or so, I mean, I'm just adding that, he had kavanah not to be motzi then. So they came over to Rav Moshe and they asked him, do we have to hear Kriyas HaTorah a second time around? So he said, no. Why? He was machadish that although we have a principle called Shomer Ka'ona, and in Shomer Ka'ona, Reuven, let's say, recites Kiddush on behalf of Shimon, and Shimon hears the Kiddush of Reuven and he's Yotzei, there the mitzvah is Kiddush, the Maisa mitzvah is the Kiddush. And in order for that to relate to the Shomea, that the Mashvia, the Kore, the Mekadesh, has to have in mind that he's being Motzi the Shomea. But he said that in Kriyas HaTorah, the nature of the obligation is such that it's not that you and I and everyone else in the audience has to read the Torah. That's not the chiyuv. It's not my individual mitzvah to read the Torah. Of course, I have to participate in hearing the Torah, but the kriya itself is not is not an individual chiyuv. But rather, Moshe said the nature of the mitzvah of Kriyas HaTorah is that the Torah should be read publicly in front of a tzibur, and each person links up to the tzibur. So certainly, as a shomer, I have to link up to the kriya of the Torah, meaning I have to attach myself and have kavana to be yotzei with that kriya. But on the other hand, it's not my mitzvah to be the korei, but rather the Torah has to be read publicly. Therefore, you don't need a kavana on behalf of the korei that his kriya should relate to each person in the tzibur. All he has to do is create an entity called Torah, of a Torah b'tzibur, and that entity is enough that every person in the audience could be yotzei. So I was wondering, what would Rav Moshe say about Kriyas HaMegillah? When I hear the Megillah, there's a din of Shomer Ka'onet, and I have to read the Megillah, but your kriya, if you're the Baal Kore, relates to me because of Shomer Ka'onet. So from that perspective, like the case of Kiddush, so too in the case of Kriyas HaMegillah, the Kore should have to have in mind that he wants to be motzi the Shomer. But perhaps there's another dimension to Kriyas HaMegillah, that Kriyas HaMegillah is not just what we call a chobas Kriyas HaMegillah for the purpose of Pirsum HaNes. There's another dimension to Kriyas HaMegillah, and that is its Torah. The Megillah is no less Torah than any other parts of Tanakh. And in that sense, if the Koreas HaMegillah is reading the Megillah publicly, he's creating an entity of Megillah, and the Megillah has to be read in front of the tzibur. So just like Rav Moshe said in the case of Kriyas HaTorah, that the mitzvah is not the act of Kriya, but that the Torah itself should be read in front of a tzibur, so too the Megillah, in addition to being a Maisa Kriya, is also a chiyuv that the Megillah as Torah should be read. So therefore, even if the Kore would not have Kavana to be Motzi, the Shomim, but nevertheless, he, the Kore, created this entity called the Megillah. It's a Cheftza Shel Torah. And insofar as that entity of Torah, of Megillah, has been read publicly, the members of the audience just have to link in and have Kavana Lotzitz. And therefore the Kavanas HaKore would not be critical. Ah, you'll ask me, but what about the Chovas Kriya? Right, the Mitzvah Megillah is a Chovas Kriya. The Gemara says it in the Sugya of Lo'azim, that the mitzvah is Kriya and Pirsum Anes. Enochinami, as far as Kriya is concerned, B'toras mitzvahs Pirsum Anes, there you would need Kavanas HaMashmiya. The Kore would have to have Kavana. But I wouldn't say that it would be meaningless and totally futile if he was absent that Kavana. Why? Because Kriyas HaMegillah, in addition to being a mitzvah Pirsum Anes, of Kriya and Pirsum Anes, is also a dimension of Kriyas HaTorah, of public reading of the Torah. So as far as the public reading of the Torah is concerned, we can gain at least one kiyum based on the definition of Rav Moshe Soloveitch. That's what I was thinking. Now perhaps in Megillah there's an obligation, there's a requirement to seek out a tzibur. Again, even though the Gemara on Daf Hey postulates a machlokes between Rav Asi and Rav. Rav Asi says that Kriyas HaMegillah requires asara, requires 10 people, bein bizmana, bein shalom bizmana. Rav disagrees. And Rav says that shalom bizmana, for example, the Kfarim are reading it on Yidalf, basic Gimel, there you must have asara. But Megillah bizmana, Yidalf for the Prozim and Tesvav for the Krochim, doesn't require asara. But nevertheless, Rav Halach Lamaisi was machmir for the Sheet of Rav Asi, and even on Yudalit and Tesvav, he required a minyan, or at least he obligated the tzibur to look for a minyan. And that's how it's paskin in Shulchan Aruch, that Kriyas HaMegillah should try as much as he can to hear the Megillah in front of Asara. Well, let's say, for example, there was a public reading of the Megillah and a certain individual missed the Kriya. He couldn't be there. Now he has to read it on his own. So he has to run around and try to get together another 9 people in order to read it in front of Asara. And that's even according to Rav. So Rav agrees that in the ideal mitzvah of Megillah, you have Asara. And I would suggest the following, that if there's an element of tzibur that's built into the very fabric of Megillah, and that even Rav agrees that to be mekayim the mitzvah of Megillah in its ideal way, you have to read it in front of Asara, so that Megillah b'yachid is missing, is deficient, it's incomplete as far as the kiyum mitzvah is concerned. It's not the ideal kiyum. And that's the way we paskin. If that be the case, then Megillah has a unique status, meaning it's a complex hybrid mitzvah. It's got a chovas yachid, and you could actually fulfill the mitzvah without a tzibur, and that's going to be your fallback position. But it also has a kiyum of tzibur to it, of Megillah b'fnei asara. So I was wondering, what do you do in a case of a mitzvah that's a hybrid mitzvah, and it has two elements to it? So in cases like that, I think you could say the following, that there's a difference between what we call mitzvah min ha-muvchar, you know, that the way we do the mitzvah in its perfect form, ideally, and the gufa shel mitzvah, the very nitty-gritty, bare-bones essence of the mitzvah. As far as the nitty-gritty mitzvah, Megillah, at least Pizmano, on Yudal and Tesvav, is a Chovas Yachin. And I would not classify it as a hybrid mitzvah if I'm looking at the bare-bones kiyum and the critical, indispensable mitzvah. It's only Yachin. But on the other hand, if I broaden my scope and I want to understand the mitzvah of Megillah from an ideal perspective of mitzvah and amuvcha, then we add a new dimension into the mitzvah, and that's the kiyum tzibur. And that's where I think Rav Moshe would say that if I heard the Megillah in being read in the tzibur, and I had kavanah latzeis, and the korei did not have kavanah to be motzi me, it would be like kriyas haTorah, at least as far as that kiyum tzibur. The Megillah has to be read, and it was read, and now every one of the shomim could link up to the Megillah. Okay, let's learn the Agadata here in Masechta Megillah, and we're on the bottom of Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis, and we got up to the Gemara. Let's count up from the bottom of the Amud 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Five lines up, and we got up to Imal HaMelech Tov. So the last thing that we discussed, just to review, is the Lashon Hara of Haman. And it really was Haman's expertise and success at convincing Ahasuerus to get rid of the Jews, and that Ahasuerus would not lose anything by destroying and annihilating the Jewish people. On the contrary, he would gain. And in fact, the Jewish people are not reliable. They're not, you know, they're not citizens that give covet to the Malchus. And the last thing he said when Haman describes their das, their religion as shonos we call am, that their religious practices are so different than any other nation. They don't want to intermarry with us. And not only that, he demonstrates it to Ahasuerus. He says, what happens if a fly would fall into a cup of wine? So the Jewish people would take out the fly and drink the wine. But if Ahasuerus, as a guy, would touch the wine, they would spill it out. That's the level of respect that they have. They find the touch of a guy to wine more repulsive than even a fly that fell into the wine. This was Haman's. So the pasuk says the following: Imal Amelech Tov Yikasev Li Abdom Vaseres Alafim Kikar Kesef Eshkol Al Yidei Osei Amlocha Lahavi El Ginze Hamelech. Now comes the bribery element in Haman's presentation. Not only will you lose absolutely nothing by destroying the Jewish people, says Haman to Ahasuerus, you'll gain a lot. Why? Because there's going to be a booty. There's going to be a seres alofim kikar kesef, which is going to be taken away from the Jewish possessions after we destroy the Jews, and that will be placed in the Ginzei HaMelech, in the treasuries of the king. Now, as you know, all this Agadata is trying to convey the message that everything was organized by God. Everything was part of a divine plan. This, too, is part of a divine plan. And as we said in the past, God's relationship to the Jewish people is such that even when He punishes them, and even if He exiles them, He always plants the seeds of the refuah before the makkah. And this is another example of divine providence. Amar Eish Lakish, Galui v'yadu l'fnei misha amar v'hoya ha'olam sha'asid ha'man lishkol shkolim li'yado shalach ha'shver shal Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what's going to happen at the end of time. He knows in advance that Haman is going to weigh out Aseres Alofim Kikar Kesef in order to convince Ahasuerus to destroy the Jewish people. Ulefichach hikdim shikleyem lishkolov It means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu already gave a mitzvah back in the Midbar of Machtzis HaShekel. Now, of course, the Machtzis HaShekel in the Midbar was collected primarily to build the Mishkan itself. However, there's another dimension to the Machtzis HaShekel, and that's above and beyond the building, it's the construction of the Mishkan, and that's for the sake of what's called Karbonos Tzibur. So the Machtzis HaShekel was collected from each Jew, it was placed into what's called the Trumas HaLishka, and any animal that was purchased from the money of the Trumas HaLishka was designated as a Karbon Tzibur. And all this was organized in the divine plan way ahead of Haman's seduction of Ahasuerus to weigh out all these shkolim, lishkol shkolim, behind the Disnan. And not only that, the mitzvah of shkolim actually begins in the month of Adar. Be'echad b'Adar mashmiyim al shkolim. Even though technically the mitzvah of Machtzis HaShekel, the obligation, only emerges with Nisan, with the first of the month of Nisan, but nevertheless, already at the beginning of Chodesh Adar, they would be machriz, the Bezdin would be machriz, they make an announcement, al Ashkolin, that Bnei Yisrael have to bring a Machtzis HaShekel for the purpose of Karbonos Tzibur. So that by the time we got to Echad ben Nisan, they could already use that money from the Trumas HaLishka and the New Year's money to buy Karbonos for that year. And not only that, even today, although we don't have Hachroza on Shkolim today, we do have another kind of Hachroza, and that's called Al HaKelayim. Because the law is that not only is a Jew enjoined from planting Kelayim, the mixture of two seeds, but he's also enjoined from Kiyum HaKelayim, from Shehiyas HaKelayim. And just like in Chametz, there's an Iser that you're not allowed to leave Chametz in your possession, so too, in Kelayim, there's an Iser of leaving Kelayim in your possession. And therefore, the mitzvah requires Akira. Akira means to uproot Kelayim from the Sados. In other words, if there was a Gidol, there was a growth of Kelayim, of Zroim, and you see it where there's Zroim next to Tvua, within close proximity, and for that you have to learn, of course, the Masechta Kelayim. Then there's a din that once a year we have to notify the people to go out into the fields, check their fields, and see if they indeed discover a tzemach, a growth that is a combination of Zroim and Tvua. Because around this time of the year, it becomes nikar, it becomes recognizable in the field. And therefore we make achroza on Rosh Chodesh Adar to go out into the fields to be oker any kelayim. And the din of achroza now is a twofold achroza. There's achroza al shkolim and there's achroza on kelayim. And both of these are in the month of Adar. And the Hachroza on the Shkolim in Rosh Chodesh Adar is to remind us already of the miracle that took place in this month, that the Shkolim would now serve as a protection, as a salvation for the Jewish people against Haman's plan to be Shokel, the Aseres HaLochim Shkolim. So this is what you call HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Makdim Refuah L'Mach.
You could say also for the Kaloya. Why? Because the big day kahuna for Kaloya.
Oh.
So maybe that's
also connected.
Right.
Vayomer Amelch Lahaman, Akesef Nasun Lach, Va'am Lasospo Ketov Beinecha. In other words, Ahasuerus says, you keep the money. He was Mevater on the money, even though it was a pretty serious amount of money, which Haman had suggested present to give to him. And he agrees to destroy the Jewish people. Amar Rabbi Abba, here we're turning to Daf Yudalid. Mashal the Achashverosh Mahaman Lema Dover Domen. So Rabbi Abba wants to give a metaphor to understand the relationship between Achashverosh and Haman. In other words, even though Achashverosh wanted to pay, I'm sorry, even though Haman wanted to pay off Achashverosh with this very significant sum of money, in order to achieve Achashverosh's approval for the plan. Nevertheless, Achashverosh didn't even want to accept the money. He says, you go ahead and do what you want to do without payment. He says, I'll give you a mashal. Shnei b'nei adam. There are two people, and you'll see that each one is hoping that the other one will sell him something. Echad li'echad haya lo tel. One person had a pile of dirt, of earth, a little bit of a mound of earth in his field. He wanted to get rid of that mound. Uliechan and his neighbor, he had a hole in his ground. Betok sadehu. Is Balachritz Omar, the Balachritz is thinking to himself, me yitein li tel zebedomim, I'm willing to pay for someone's offer, if he has extra offer, you know, a pile of a mound of dirt, and I would take this dirt and I'll fill in my field. That's called Ashviye Guba, to flatten out the ground. And on the other side of the fence, the Balatel is saying to himself, the one who owns this mound, Mi yiten li charitz zebedamin. If somebody would allow me to dump my excess dirt into his ditch, I'd be willing to pay for that. Li yamin. After a certain period of time, Nizdavgu, Zeitzelze, they finally encountered one another. So Amalo Balacharitz Lavalatel. So the Balacharitz, who needs to fill in his ditch, he turns to the owner of this mound, this pile of dirt, and he says, Mecharli Tilcha, please, I'm willing to pay for your mound, for your dirt. Amalo. So the Balatel says, Toloso Bechinam. From my point, please take him. I would even be willing to pay you to fill in, you know, to allow me to dump all my extra surplus earth into your tail, because I want to get rid of into your ditch, because I want to get rid of my tail. So the guy, the Bala tail, is looking for an opportunity to get rid of his tail. The Bala Hachritz is looking for an opportunity to fill in his chritz. And each one says halavai. And he, if the other guy says to him, well, I'm willing to pay you for this, right? Muchan ani l'shalem avurkach, I'm willing to pay you to chop down your extra mound of dirt in order to be able for me to fill it in. And the guy on the other side says, Adarabba, I would be willing to pay you to take this mound of earth. So therefore he doesn't have to take payment. And in the Nimshal, Haman wants to pay Achashverosh, Aser Salof from Kikar Kesef, in order to achieve his consent to annihilate the Jewish people. So Achashverosh answers, Achesef Nosen Loch, V'am Lassos Motom Beinecha. Basically, you're doing me the greatest favor. This is what I want to do. I want to destroy the Jewish people. I'm just looking for someone who's going to do the dirty work for me. And therefore, you don't have to pay me. Maybe I should be paying you. I'm so elated in the fact that you're willing to be my agent to carry out my desire that you don't have to pay me for that. If anything, I have to pay you for that. And it's the same thing as the mashal that the Bala Chrit says to the Bala Tel, you know what? Sell me your tail, because I need that offer to fill in my mound. So the Bala tail says to him, please take it free, because I'm looking to get rid of it and I just want to dump it into a hole. Now, on a philosophical level, I never know how far we want to go in the learning of Agadita, but I'm tempted to tell you something that I saw in the Patan Yitzchak of Rav Yitzchak Hutner. He says that this partnership between Achashverosh and Haman really represents a partnership between two categories of anti-Semites. He says Achashverosh represents what we call the Dalit Malchios. That's one form or category of anti-Semitism. Haman represents Amalek, and that's a whole different category of anti-Semitism. Again, I'm not going to go into all the details, it's a beautiful piece, but suffice it to say that the most powerful anti-Semitism we ever experienced in ancient Jewish history is this partnership between Achashverosh and Haman. They both want to get rid of the Jewish people, but for two different reasons. And there's one form, one class of anti-Semitism which is typical of the Dalit Malchios, And here we're talking about Parasumada is one of the Dalit Malchios. And there's another form of anti-Semitism and hatred against the Jew, which is typical of Amalek. And if Amalek joins hands with the Dalit Malchios, they try to subjugate the Jews. Oy vavoy, as we say here in Israel, it's a very bad situation.
There's related to that, this has an interesting update from Benyahu.
Yeah, that's the Benishkan, yeah.
Okay, then it basically was that Haman was the ditch owner because he actually wanted to degrade the Jews, whereas Ahasuerus respected them, but he still wanted to destroy them. So he was the mountain owner, and as a result, because Ahasuerus wanted to still respect the Jews, he didn't want to actually, humiliate them. He didn't want to therefore sell them to Haman, and as a result, he was able to stay as a king rather than actually be punished with death.
Vayosar HaMelech es tabato, the pasuk says me al yodo vayitno lahaman ben amdosa gogi tzora hayehudim. I felt like bringing my grog today. Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana. Gidola Soras Tabas Yoser Me'arboyim Ushmona Neviyim V'Sheva Neviyah Shenisnablohem L'Yisrael. In other words, we had 48 Neviyim and 7 Neviyos. They all tried to castigate and to rebuke the Jewish people with Divrei Tochacha, and they were not as successful as one single act called Hasoras Tabas, which means that Ahasuerus takes his ring off, his signet ring, with the special seal of the king, he gives it over to Haman. Kulam, all these great Nevi'im, lo hechzirim lebutav, they were not able to get the children of Israel to, at least in a complete sense, do tshuva. But ve'ilu, in contrast, hasoras tabas, hechzirasa lebutav, as a result of the gzera of Haman, which was now sealed with the signet of Achashverosh, the Jewish people accepted upon themselves tainios, various fast days, tshuva, and as a result they merited the great salvation, the miracle of Purim. Now this concept of... Yeah, I'm sorry.
Well, it just occurs to me, because one of the things that's always bothered me is that there are all these different things that occurred that if they didn't occur, for example, if Mordechai had just, given in to Haman, or if Esther was never even the queen, maybe this whole thing wouldn't have started because Mordecai wouldn't have been sitting there in the whole path.
Right.
And I always wondered about why, and maybe it's because the whole point of this was to get to the tshuva rather than, it's not just about saving the Jew, the miracle to save the Jews, it's actually driving them to the tshuva. Right? And if all of those things didn't occur, then we wouldn't have had this,
right.
The Jews wouldn't have made tshuva.
So the purpose and the goal of exile from a divine perspective is twofold. Number one, it's punishment, but it's also a way of waking up the Jewish people, bringing them to do tshuva. Now this concept of Hasoras Tabas has really two parts to it. One is the Tabas that goes from the hand of Ahasuerosh onto the finger of Haman. And the second part of Hasoras Tabas is to take the Tabas off of Haman and give it over to Mordechai. And the Gaon of Vilna is famous for saying that the Adalo Yoda of Purim is to not know the difference between Gedulas Mordechai, which is called Baruch Mordechai, and Or Haman and Hapolas Haman. And the truth is that this concept of Hasoras HaTabas really combines the two. On the one hand, it's Nefilas Haman, because we're going to take away the Tabas from Haman. But not only that, the ring of Achashverosh, which is on Haman, is now going to be transferred over to Mordechai, and that's Gedulas Mordechai. So everything seems to be focused around Hasoras Tabas. The first stage of Hasoras Tabas is meant to bring the Jews to do tshuva, because Amalek is coming to the fore and he's controlling and he's going to try to annihilate the Jewish people. On the other hand, the Hasoras Tabas also indicates the Gedulas Mordechai, because it's taken away from Haman. And that's what happens in the Megillah, that Haman himself plans to destroy the Jewish people and he gets destroyed himself. And that's called the Filas Haman. But there's also an element of Baruch Mordechai, that Mordechai is Ol Gdula. And this is all so reminiscent of the story of Yosef HaTzadik, you know, that he reaches the lowest level, he's sold as an Eved, and so forth and so on, and then he rises to Gedulas Yosef, to that high level of being the second in command, Paro's right hand. And the concept of Amalek is very unique, because Chazal say about Amalek that his relationship to Klal Yisrael is such that Kishezeh Kam, Zeh Nofel. You know, it's if Amalek is up, we're down, the Jewish people are down. If the Jewish people are up, then Amalek is down. And all this is really indicated by Asaras HaTavas. So it's either Gedulas Haman, that he gets the Tavas, and then we're down in the dumps, or on the contrary, the Tavas is going to be taken from Haman, and that's going to be Nefilas Haman, and it's given over to Mordechai, is Zeh Nofel Vezeh Kam. All this is really inherent in the concept of Asaras Tavas.
Then we also learned that it's the same thing with Esau, with Edom, and Israel as well. So if you're talking about the alliance of the Malchus and Amalek, then it seems like whenever we're down, then they're both up at the same time.
Right. Tana Rabbanan. This is a very, very famous Gemara, very fundamental, for many different reasons. Tana Rabbanan. Arba'im u'shmona neviim u'sheva neviyos nisnabu lehem li'yisrova l'pichsuv l'osiru al mashakosu v'atorah chutz mi'mikra megillah. The Torah prohibits us from adding a mitzvah or subtracting a mitzvah. That's Baltosim and Baltigra. And even though we had 48 Nevi'im and 7 Nevi'os, never did they add anything to the Torah or subtract anything from the Torah. Not even a single letter. And certainly not a mitzvah. Chutz, until something changed. Mikra Megillah. When Mordechai and Esther were able to prevail over the giants and the scholars of their generation, and amongst them there were some Nevi'im, that we should establish a mitzvah of Kriyas Megillas Esther on Purim, this was the first time in history that Nevi'im agreed to add a mitzvah. So the Gemara right away asks the question, my darush, meaning what basis did they have? They must have found some proof, some source for allowing an additional mitzvah to the 613. Amar Rav Chiya bar Avinu Rav Yeshua ben Karcha. And the answer is what's called a kal v'chomer. Amongst the various hermeneutic principles by which we derive halachas, one of them is called kal v'chomer. And the kal v'chomer was going to be the basis to decide that we should add a new mitzvah. Why is that? Uma me avdus lecherus amrinon shira. Now Rashi says me avdus lecherus. You'll see about 5 lines down from the top. Be yitzias mitzrayim amru shira al hayam. So at Yamsuf they saw the climax of Geulas Mitzrayim, of Yitzias Mitzrayim, when the Mitzrayim went down to the bottom of the sea. And what did they do? How did they respond to that great episode? They recited Shira, Oz Yashir, on the Yam Suf. And they were only celebrating with this Shira the liberation of the Jews from slavery. In the case of Megillas Esther, in the case of the Yeshua from Gzeres Haman, is Mimisa L'chayim. That wasn't just to save them from slavery and liberate them as slaves. It was much more far-reaching. It was to save the Jewish people from annihilation. Is Lo Kolshke, how much more so they should have to recite Shira? And now the Gemara is going to ask, well, where is the Shira? I don't know that on Purim we have a mitzvah of Shira, Ihachi Hallel Nami Neima. Now it's interesting that this Gemara here and this question seems to identify Shira with Hallel. This is very, very difficult. This one line Gemara is almost impossible, because Rashi says that the Shira that we're talking about is Shira Sayam. Now Shira Sayam is not Hallel, clearly. In fact, if Shira Sayam would be Hallel, then we would be required to recite Hallel on the seventh day of Pesach, because that's the day of Kriyas Yamsu. And in fact, there is no Chiyuv Hallel on the seventh day of Pesach. I mean, we have a minug Ashkenazim have a minhag on it. Sfaradim, I don't think, make a bracha on it, but Ashkenazim maybe will make a bracha on it, but it's only a minhag. There's no requirement of halal on the seventh day of Pesach. And when the Gemara in Erechin codifies the entire, enumerates the entire list of days for halal, the seventh day of Pesach is not on the list. So the Gemara wants to say that we should be reciting halal on Purim. Why? Because of the Kavachomer from Shira. If Shira may Avdus L'Cherus, then how much more so there should be Shira from Misa L'Chaim? Therefore we should be saying halal. What do you mean we should be saying halal? Did they say halal on the seventh day of Pesach? Or are we saying halal to commemorate that great miracle of the seventh day of Pesach?
Well,
but you have an answer to that question? Because if you have an answer to that question, you're gonna really beat out a lot of Gdolim who really had a problem with this. You know?
Well, that's if you go with Rosh's interpretation.
Oh, okay, good. You want to go with a different interpretation? All right, yeah, go ahead.
The Shira they're talking about is halal.
Right. It's only Rashi, you're right. Rashi is the one who says that the Shira here is a reference to the seventh day of Pesach and Kriyas Yamsuf. If not, we could say that the word Shira indicates some sort of general amorphous element or experience.
Next Rashi says halal Shira, so next Rashi.
Yeah, of course, because Rashi has to justify the fact that we should be saying halal, but Rashi's not telling us why. You know, mimakom shabbos. You know, we always have a principle in Kal Vachomer that dial of oven and dinlios cannot. You go back to the original halal, and oddly, shall I say paradoxically, there is no halal on that very miracle. We do not have halal. Now, again, if the Gemara wants to say that maybe at the time of the Yeshua, you know, when they took the when they took Haman and they hung him up, maybe at that time they should have said Shiro, Halil. You know, that's one thing, because you know there is such a thing as Halil at the time of a miracle. But the Gemara is going much further than that. The Gemara wants to say that they should have established a Chiv Halil, like they did on Hanukkah, for Purim for all generations. That's a little bit odd that you're deriving that from, according to Rashi, Shiro Sayyah.
Well, even you could even go that way if you say that we say there is a Chiv Halil on the first day of Pesach. And the Shiras Hayam is just the culmination of that process. I mean, that's when, you know, they began.
So you have to understand one thing, Eric. There are two categories of halal. There's halal b'toris man, and there's halal b'toris nets. The two machayim of halal. What generates the chival? So as far as the first day of Pesach is concerned, that has nothing to do with nets. That's because even on Shmuis or Sukkot or whatever holiday you have, there's a chiyuv halal. There's another category which is really personified by Chanukah, which is halal and nets. So if you break down the 11 days of halal, or in Chutzot it's 21, into two different component parts, there's one category which is Zman. The Zman itself generates halal. And there's another category where the Nes generates halal. I think what the Gemara is analyzing here
is the Nes.
I mean, there is a sheet of the Meiri that the Mishnah Berurah works very hard back and forth. And I think, Osher, we discussed this yesterday, right?
Yeah.
The Meiri sheet is that even the Zman itself of Purim should be Machayev Halal.
Right.
And if I don't have a Megillah or if I don't have anything, I should be reciting Halal. But the simple shot in the Gemara is that we're analyzing the Nes. And the shall I say, the weightiness of the Nes, if there's such a word, right? The heaviness of the Nes should be the barometer should be the significance of the Nes, you know, the impact of the Nes. What did the Nes accomplish? So the Gemara says the following. In the case of Yetzias Mitzrayim, okay, the Nes is very important. We're not trying to minimize it, but it's only the Avdus and Cheres. The Mitzvah were not destroying us at this point. But in the case of Purim, I mean, that's even a greater Nes.
I mean, you could say, I mean, with Sukkot and Shavuos, it's purely Zman, but even with Yetzias Mitzrayim, the whole thing was a Nes from the beginning. You had all of the Makos, and so you could say that, you know, the day, you know, the first day of Pesach still could be, you know, the halal there is for all of the Nisim, because it started with, you know,
it could be, you're right,
getting all the way through to
the halal on the night of Pesach, the halal on the night of Pesach, that might be Zechel and Nes. But the challah on the day of Pesach.
Okay, so let's say the challah on the night
is Yontif. Yeah, right, so that could be pshat here. Maybe what the Gemara is trying to do is trying to establish a different kind of a challah of Nes. In any event, the Gemara is going to offer three answers to this question. So again, the basic question, which is really irritating, you know, it's very bothersome. Hanukkah requires 8 days of Hallel. Gosh, give me on Purim 1 day of Hallel. Don't be so stingy. There's no Hallel on Purim. That's a very, you know, it's a question that we should go to sleep with at night. You know, why is there no Hallel on Purim? So the first answer to the Gemara is Lefisha Ein Omer Hallel Al Nes Sheba Chutzlar. So we have a principle that there are two types of Nisim. There's a Nes in Eretz Yisrael, like Hanukkah, for example, and then there's a Nes in Chutz Laretz, in Paras, and Shushan, like Purim. And we have a principle here. We don't understand exactly why. We'll have to analyze that, maybe not today, but tomorrow. And that is that we don't recite Hallel on a Nes in Chutz Laretz. But again, you see clearly that the Gemara is analyzing the Sugya of Hallel from the perspective of Nes, not from the Meiri's perspective that the Zman itself should be Mechayev Hal. And therefore the Gemara said very well that the Nes of Purim is even greater than the Nes of Yetzias Mitzrayim. But again, that's very intriguing, because we don't know that the Hallel of Pesach is a Hallel of Nes. I mean, we'd say it's a Hallel of... Okay, that's the first answer in the Gemara. And again, as I said before, we'll have to reserve judgment about this first answer. Why is it that there's no Hallel on a Nes in Chutz Laretz? It's a second, and now the Gemara attacks it as follows. It says, wait a second. We wanted to suggest that there was Hallel on Yetzias Mitzrayim. And according to Rashi, we're talking about the Nes of Kriyas Yamsuf. Well, Kriyas Yamsuf did not occur in Eretz Yisrael. So Gemara says, "Hare!" I'm just adding the word "Hare." Yetzias Mitzrayim dines shebechutz laretz heichi amrinon shira. And again, if we're assuming that shira equals hallel, then the Gemara assumes that at least at the time of the miracle they established hallel and shira equals hallel. I'm not exactly sure why that projects itself through the generations, because I don't know that there's a chi of Hallel on Yetzias Mitzrayim. But in any event, the Nes itself took place in Chutz Laretz. So the Gemara gives the following answer, that this rule of Ein Omrim Hallel Nes Sheba Chutz Laretz was an enactment. That rule was enacted at a certain moment in history. In other words, there are two periods of Jewish history. There's period number one, the earlier period, and then there's period number two, which is the later period. Only with regard to the later period, after a certain turning point in history, then we apply the principle, we enact this principle called Ein Omrim Hallel on Nes in Chutz. But in the earlier period, we would have to recite Hallel even on a Nes in Chutz. It's Kinsanya, Ad Shelo Nichnasu Yisrael Aretz. Now, it's during this period of time, starting with Yetzias Mitzrayim up until the entry into the land of Israel, Hukshu Kol Aratzos Lomar Shira, any Nes that happened anywhere on the face of the earth for the benefit of Klal Yisrael would generate a fee of Hallel. But Misha Nichnasu LeYisrael LaAretz, at that particular moment in time, is then the halacha was mafkia Hallel. It totally invalidated Hallel in Chutz Laretz. Lo Hukshu Kol Aratzos Lomar Shira. And usually when you see the phrase of Nichnasu Yisrael La'aretz, you identify it as what we call Kiddush Eretz Yisrael, right? Kiddushas Eretz Yisrael is not a given. It's not a given. It doesn't always exist. It has to be created. And the question is how you create that Kiddusha. And we're talking now about the first Kiddusha, right, that's going to lead and culminate to at the time Nuchanetzah to goes. But that first Kiddush is based on Klal Yisrael entering into the land and conquering the land. That's called Kiddush Al Yedei Kibush. So they conquered the land and that sanctified the land. So as soon as that Kiddush was effectuated, now we enact a principle called Ein Omrim Hallel Al Nes Sheba Chutz Laretz. The only Hallel that we have is an Anes in Eretz Yisrael. So, for example, you know, there's a whole issue today about Yom HaTzmaut, whether you say Hallel Yom HaTzmaut, and the Gemara here would support, at least in this detail, there may be other details and requirements for Hallel, but would support Hallel on Yom HaTzmaut, because Hallel on Yom HaTzmaut would commemorate an end Sheva Eretz Yisrael. So in Chutzlitz, you have different communities that were south, that were saved, and there are many communities that, at least historically, had a chiyuv and a minute to say Hallel on a certain day when they experienced the salvation. But that's not going to obligate the entire Klal Yisrael, even those who live in other cities, in Hallel. But when it comes to a Ness that affected Eretz Yisrael, now here are two ways of understanding that. I mean, a Ness in Eretz Yisrael by definition affects the entire Jewish population, because that's the nature of a Ness in Eretz Yisrael. Or we're talking about the Bnei Eretz Yisrael, that those who live in Eretz Yisrael, and then maybe later if you join in that, you have to pick up the minhag of Eretz Yisrael, they have an obligation to recite Hallel on behalf of to commemorate their miracle that they experienced in Eretz Yisrael. So even if I grant you that the establishment of the State of Israel was miraculous, it was divine, and therefore there should be a Ness in Eretz Yisrael, but nevertheless it could be that doesn't generate a Chiyuv Hallel on the entire world. Unless we assume that by definition, inherent in the experience of a Ness in Eretz Yisrael, that's considered a machaya for the entire globe. But let's go back now to Yitzis Mitzrayim. Yitzis Mitzrayim is pre-Kiddush Eretz Yisrael. It's before they entered into Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, the rule of Ein Omrim Halal Neshim Chutzis doesn't yet apply, wasn't yet activated, and therefore there was a chiyuv to recite Halal on Pesach because of that miracle that transpired before Knisa Eretz Yisrael. But Purim is already after Knisa Eretz Yisrael, and therefore, even though there was a great miracle, that doesn't generate a chiyuv Halal because of the principle Ein Omrim Halal Al Nes Sheva Chutzlar.
With this price, it's really, I going back to the Rashi before identifying it as Shir Tzayam, it's really hard to, this makes it even more, makes it appear even more that the prior statement about Shira was about Hallel, not about Shir Tzayam. So I'm still having trouble understanding how
Rashi states that. I don't know exactly how do we justify this Rashi. Okay, so again, the Gemara says that there's no Hallel on the Ness of Purim for, let's call it, if you don't mind, a technical reason, and that is that the condition for Hallel on the Ness is once the Jewish people, after they enter into the land, it's got to be a Ness that applies in Eretz Yisrael, that occurred in Eretz Yisrael. Now here, Rabosai, I'm bothered by the following question. It just occurred to me as we were speaking. The Ness of Purim took place between Churban Bayis Rishon and Binyan Bayis Sheni. So I'm thinking out loud. We paskin that Kedusha Rishon or Kitchel Shaitim will low Kitchel Osislov. And if that be the case, then why are we bothered by the fact that this Ness took place in Chutzlaretz? This historical period should be absolutely equivalent, halachically, to the period of Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is before Knisa Eretz Yisrael. Because if I identify Knisa Eretz Yisrael as Kiddush Haaretz, that's premise number one, which again you could question, but if I accept that premise, then premise number two is that Kiddush Eretz Yisrael, Kiddush Rishona, Kishol Shaitim Velo Kishol Osim Lavo, which leads me to my third premise, that in the period of time between Churban Bayis Sheni and the building of Bayis, Churban Bayis Rishon and building of Bayis Sheni, there was no Kiddush, means Batla Kiddusha. So for example, what would be the status of Trumas of Maestris during the 70-year period? We had a lot to talk about in the 70-year period. Yeah. I made a siyum on that. I went home and I had a schnapps. I was so happy when we finished the 70-year period. But let me go back to the 70-year period for a minute, right? So during that 70-year period, was the chiyuv and trumas of Maestris min HaTorah? So the answer is it depends. So with the kitchel l'shaitim below kitchel law, so we pass in low kitchel law, which means that there is no chiyuv trumas of Maestris in Eretz Yisrael during this period of time of Nes Purim.
Okay.
mean, there is no Kiddush in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore, l'chora, why should we apply the principle of Ein? You know, it's almost as if, well, once we initiated this principle and we enacted Ein Omer Nes, Ein Omer Hal Al Neshim B'Chutzarts, from now on till doomsday, it doesn't matter whether or not the Kiddush in Eretz Yisrael has to exist. Why should that be so? Question that just occurred to me as we were learning this.
Again, you could make it as a separate entity in terms of entering Eretz Yisrael remains, even though Kishul Asim, there's still a phenomenon of entering Eretz Yisrael. We were at once
independent of Kishul.
Independent of Kishul Eretz Yisrael. There's a phenomenon of entering Eretz Yisrael. And maybe you could even go back further in terms of, you know, the Ramban, in terms of the Avos did all the mitzvos in Eretz Yisrael. You know, they did all the Taya mitzvos, right, when they were in Eretz Yisrael.
And Rav had to die in Chutzlar.
Right. Exactly. So in that you could say already there is a kedusha in a sense of Eretz Yisrael, irrespective of Kitchel Shai to Kitchel Basel level. There still remains some type of kedusha in Eretz Yisrael, and you could base that on this.
A little bit more than that is. There were still Jews living in Eretz Yisrael at that time during the 70 years. We weren't completely wiped out from Eretz Yisrael.
Right.
So, if you separate a little bit from the Kedusha and just say the presence of us in Eretz Yisrael gives rise to, you know, to this, then, you know, if we weren't completely removed, we were, even though the Kedusha may not be there, we weren't completely removed from Eretz Yisrael. So. Right.
So we're up to Rav Nachman. This is the famous Rav Nachman of Kriyas HaMegillah, Kriyas HaZuhi Lula. I just want to say this, Asher. Today, you know, is the Yard Center of Moshe Soloveitchik.
Yes.
So Rav Moshe is famous for saying that there's something called Shem Eretz Yisrael and Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. The only problem is that Rav Moshe identifies Shem Eretz Yisrael from the time of Avraham Avinu. Whom is Halech Ba'aretz? And that's the principle in the Gemara in Baba Basra, which is a halachic principle called Eretz Yisrael Mukzekasi Lanu Me'am Oseinu. So I'm just wondering, you know, you made the point that when the Jewish people enter into the land, maybe it generates some sort of Kedusha. So I'd have to find a middle category between Rav Moshe Soloveitchik's two categories. He has one category called Shem Eretz Yisrael, which is initiated by Avraham Avinu, and then he has Kedusha Eretz Yisrael, which depends upon Kibush and his Yashrus and everything else.
There were, maybe it's because they were still living there. You just mentioned Rachel being at Chutzal Arts, but she actually died in the land. I never had this.
I remember when I learned the Ramban. I think if you look at Rabbi Shevel, he has a discussion about that. Do you have the Moser of Kuk Ramban?
No.
You should get a hold of it if you can. Rabbi Shevel makes a lot of interesting comments. You know. All right, everyone, you should have a great day. Yeah.